It is your money, and welcome to the big show. If you have a financial question for our speakers today, you can call this number 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that is 1-888-6-ADVICE. And you can email questions at any time to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. And you can certainly text now at 651-461-9226. Now, here is Senior Vice President and Financial Advisor Peg Webb and the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and Financial Advisor Bruce Helmer. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Hello, Peg. Hello, Susie Jones. Hey, Susie and listeners, Peg and I actually do not have a specific topic today. We're going to have an open line show, and we'll address as many questions as we can from listeners. So again, Susie just gave that number, but if you want to text or call, 651-461-9226 the next hour or so, and we'll get to as many questions as we can. Peg, one of the ones that I'm getting a lot, and I suspect you are as well, is that the stock market is at or near all-time highs, depending upon which index you're looking at. And people are concerned that it's too high, and maybe it's a time to get out of the market, or maybe it's a time to stop putting money into the market. Are you getting that question? And if so, how do you respond to that?
I love that question. And before we even start, I have to say that the most popular shows that we have are Ask Bruce and Peg Anything. So I'm hoping people are saying, oh, I would love to get this answer today and call us live. About a month ago, Bruce, we had Gary Quinzel, one of Wealth Enhancement Group's investment managers, and he pointed out all the different directions and thoughts that the markets have and kind of gave us a good clarity on there's a couple factors that are driving our anxiety right now as to where the stock market goes, and not only just the stock market, but where interest rates are going. So the Fed is having an important part right now, and they're very vocal about what they're going to do. You know, are they going to raise interest rates or are they going to reduce? Well, by the way, it's more likely that they would reduce. But we hear this word, a couple words, monetary policy and easing cycle. Well, what they're following is how is the economy doing with the interest rates that we have right now? And there's still that big R word out there. Are we going to maybe possibly go into a recession? So it's almost like if you and I, Bruce, got on a balancing beam, you know, in the gymnastic world, and we're just, you know, trying to keep our balance, and all these indicators that are coming are confusing us as to what the Fed might do, and do we need to be cautious about recession? And then secondly, when it comes to the stock market, it still has a lot of momentum. And my husband said to me the other day, there's no way we're buying anything right now. Do you not see the market's up like double digits year to date? But statistically, it's interesting that when the market runs like this, it tends to keep running more so even after we think that it's high. So you can't just say, oh, it's high now, I'm going to hold off and buy anything now. So if you want to refer back to Gary's show, Bruce and I, we have that information on wealthenhancement.com. Under Insights, it says, hey, radio show on there, radio show, and all of our past shows are on there, and they're recorded for you to listen to. Bruce?
Peg, that's a great answer. A couple things. I will admit I got distracted there because I got a mental image of myself on a balance beam, and it was not pretty to look at in my mind. The other thing that occurs to me, you mentioned that sometimes these trends keep going, and I understand that people think, well, it's high right now. But again, if you look at the statistics over the past, say, 35 years or so, once we hit a high, the return the following year on average has been about 13.5%, which is actually higher than the statistical average of the stock market. And if you go out 3 and 5 years, the numbers get even better. And people might say, well, why is that? How can that be? And it's because over time, historically, markets trend up. Yes, they go down sometimes, obviously, that doesn't go up all the time. But history has shown that over long periods of times, markets tend to trend up. So just because we're at a high right now doesn't mean we won't go higher. Now, having said that, I do want to say sometimes there's reasons to get more conservative or take some money out of the market, take some winnings off the table, so to speak. But I think those times are not driven by where the market is, or I don't think you do that just because the market's high. You do that if you need income for retirement. You do that if you have a special project, you're doing some home improvement, you don't want to borrow money. You might spend some of your money. And I always tell clients, it's okay to pay taxes because you made money. I'd much rather see you do that than get a deduction for a loss. So, yeah, some people may want to take some out of the market, but not because the market's high. That would not be my reasoning or my motivation. And then, Peg, the other thing, if we call that question 1A, should I get out of the market because the market's high right now? I'm also getting the question a lot. I'll call this 1B. Should I get out of the market because it's an election year? It's a presidential election year, and I'm afraid of what's going to happen in the market. Are you getting that one?
Absolutely. It's going to be an interesting year. It's an interesting election. I guess they're all interesting when I look back. But when I look back, you know, the decades that I've been in this financial advice world, it doesn't seem to matter wholeheartedly. It just doesn't seem to matter if one candidate wins or another candidate wins. You know, right now we're hearing a lot of campaign promises, right? This is what I'll do if I get in. This is what I'll do if I get in. And it's almost like I just suggest to clients and anyone that I talk to try to avoid what we call the noise, because that will confuse you. If you have a long-term financial plan, my recommendation to everybody is to stick with that original plan. Although I like what you said, Bruce, if it's time to rebalance, if you have more growth in your portfolio than you may like because the markets have gone up, that's a reason to sell off some of the stock market. And in the bond market, that's still on sale. So when you buy bonds today and you get, a higher interest rate, it's very, very possible still. We're our opinion is interest rates are going to go lower. We just don't know exactly when. Bruce?
Yeah, and again, I also know from the statistics that election years really don't matter, particularly in the long term. And I think, Peg, what's happening, you know, there's a lot of benefits to this technological advancements that we have in this instant information world that we live in now. But there's also some negatives. And I think one of the negatives is, in part because of this technology, people are tuned in to, you know, whatever their political persuasion is. If you're conservative, it's, you know, Fox News. If you're liberal, it's MSNBC or whatever. And they get bombarded with one side. And I think if your candidate or your party is not in power, there's this divisiveness where we've become enemies with each other. And I just don't understand that. I understand that we can disagree how to get to where we want to go, but we should all be able to agree as a country where we want to go. We want the best for our country. We want the best for our citizens. How do we get there? Let's talk about it. Let's find common ground. And I think we agree on more than what we disagree on, but we just don't listen to that or talk about that. And I'm not trying to get political, but I think that does impact people's attitude towards their investments, towards the stock market, their positivity or negativity, whether or not their political party is in power or wins the election or not. And Peg and I would tell you, the statistics show that long term, it just doesn't matter. Stop getting yourself all wound up about that just because of politics. It's not going to matter in the long term. And Peg, Susie says we're starting to get questions in, but another one that I've been getting a lot lately that I just wanted to bring up before we go to listeners. Again, I just got done talking about technology. So now there's these things, robo-advisors, or there's advanced technology where you can get financial help or financial information without ever having to talk to a real person. And for some reason, for some people, that's a big incentive. I don't want to talk to a real person. Are you getting that question? And how do you answer it? And what are some of the benefits of a full service advisor versus, say, you know, the benefits of a so-called robo-advisor?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, Bruce, in this robo-advisor does not come up in many of the conversations I have, because we have, you know, clients that have been with us a long time. They're referring clients to us. And I don't see them, I don't see those words in the mainstream where everybody would be, you know, reading about them. But they are out there. And I almost think of it as, you know, individuals who for decades have just picked a fund to buy, right? They just do it on their own. They just go buy, let's say, the S&P 500. But a robo-advisor actually helps with some personal advice. So I can't say that it's complex financial planning, kind of like we do, but they give some general advice. You know, do you have enough money to retire on? They also help with risk management. You know, how many stocks should you have? How many bonds should you have? It doesn't do a deep dive into what's important to you. You know, what are your values? Tell me about your family, that kind of thing. So with full service people like ourselves, you know, we do a deep dive in everything. And Bruce, what I would say is everybody has a choice of how they benefit or work better with one or the other. And I would say that if you're interested to interview both, right? Here you are, you're interviewing kind of a computer, then you're interviewing a real person, and then make your decision, you know, which one would work better for you and your family. Bruce?
Yeah, because you're correct. Not everybody, you know, the level of detail and the level of complexity and the deep dive that we do, not everybody wants that. Now, I think they should, but the reality is that they don't. And some people just want something simple, you know, just I've changed my jobs and I have an old 401k. So I want somebody to advise me what I should do with it, how I should invest it, where should I put it, how do I do that? And that's all they want. Now, again, we can serve that role, but I think, you know, there's a lot more that we can bring to the table, but not everybody wants all that comprehension and complexity, and that's okay. I don't want to force that on anybody that doesn't want it. Peg, I've got a couple more questions that we can go to, but Susie tells me that we are getting some texts. So, Susie, let's get listeners involved.
All right, very good. 651-461-9226. That is the number to call or text. A texter writes, I am retired and want to withdraw money this year from one of my IRA accounts for an investment. Is there anything I can do to lessen the tax burden on this withdrawal?
Susie, that's such a great question. So, Peg, again, this question and variations of it are very typical for us. And we talk a lot about the different ways investments are treated from a tax standpoint, either fully and immediately taxable, meaning you get a 1099 every year on the investment and you pay the taxes every year, tax deferred or tax delayed, like a traditional 401k or traditional IRA, where you get a deduction for the contribution, you delay the taxes on the gains till you actually take the withdrawal. And then tax advantage, things like Roth, where you don't get a deduction for the contribution, but you might be able to take withdrawals without paying any taxes on the gain. But most people have most of their money in this tax deferred category, and now they're going to take withdrawals either at retirement or maybe they're not retired yet. And when they take the withdrawal, they've got to pay the tax. And I get the question a lot, how can I avoid the taxes? And that's what the texter's saying. So you want to comment on that, Peg?
Yeah, the one thing is, number one is, you know, you should be 59 and a half before you take a withdrawal so you don't have an additional penalty. And then another magic age is 73. If you're 73 and you're taking out of your IRA, you have the ability to give directly to charity. So that's kind of a way of saving taxes, you know, in a way that you also help your community or a charity. But when you take money out of an IRA, the first thing you should think about is looking at your tax return. And say you still have time for 2023. Not much, right? Because we're just hitting on April 15th here pretty soon. But one of the things that I've coached my clients over the years to do is look to see if there's any kind of deductions that you can take. Now, one strategy is many, many of our clients do not itemize anymore because with the reform of the taxes a few years ago, we all got a higher standard deduction. So when you look at the itemized sheet, it's hard to get healthcare deductions because it has to be subject to a percentage of your overall income that you cannot write off. So that makes it harder for people to be able to qualify for that. Secondly, home mortgages. Your real estate taxes got capped at $10,000. Then there's this also category called charitable giving. So if you are going to take out of your IRA, you're going to want to be conscientious about how you give your charity. Maybe you double up, triple up on a charity so you are able to itemize. I use a strategy of a donor advised fund where if people give $1,000 a year and you're, you know, 60 years old and you have 13 years before you can take money out of a IRA to directly give to charity, we will fund a donor advised fund, you know, for 10 years of time. So you put in $10,000 or $20,000 in this fund, and then you're able to give to charity over the next 10 years when you want to, or you don't even have to give out of there. You could just have grow in the donor advised fund and then give a lump sum, you know, down the road. So my tip here is make sure you look at your tax return and see how that withdrawal will impact you. And if it will, what are your options for lowering your tax, especially if you're philanthropic and want to, and you give to charity every year? Bruce?
Peg, that's a great answer. And unfortunately, to the question, you know, how do I avoid taxes or reduce taxes? There aren't a lot of strategies available to you, you know, once you've funded that tax deferred plan. But Peg just gave some good examples of how we might do it. Peg, I want to come at it really quickly just from the other direction in that and say that people always want to avoid taxes or avoid withdrawals from tax deferred plans because of the tax consequence. And we've said this before on the show, but it bears repeating. We're looking at your taxes over a lifetime, not just in the current year. And sometimes it might be better to pay a little bit more in taxes today if it will help you pay a lot less in taxes in the future or net less tax over a lifetime. So sometimes we might say, let's take that withdrawal. We can take it out at a 10% tax rate or a 12% tax rate, and you'll never be in a lower rate than you are right now. And under the current tax law, unless a change is made before the end of 2025, the law is going to sunset and taxes will go back to where they were a decade ago, which for most people will be a slightly higher tax bracket and or less income that you can make in the low bracket. So we like to say taxes are actually on sale right now, and it may behoove people to take withdrawals from tax deferred accounts. So again, this idea that we want to avoid the taxes, I get the mindset, but sometimes it's actually to your advantage to take those withdrawals and pay some taxes right now. And again, we can help you make that determination. We got a couple minutes left, Susie. Any other texters? If we can't fully answer the question, maybe we can get it out there now and come back and answer after the break.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. 651-461-9226. A texter writes, I want to put my house and a car in a POD. How do I go about it? Maybe explain what a POD is before we go. And we have about a minute. You can start, and then maybe we have to wrap up in a few seconds.
Okay, so Peg, I'll just kind of set it up or tee it up, and We'll come back after the break, and you can answer first. But a POD is an acronym for payable upon death. The other term that you might hear a lot is TOD, T as in Tom. That stands for transferable upon death or on death. And really, both of those terms, think of it like a beneficiary. So if you have a life insurance policy or you have a retirement plan, a 401k, you name a beneficiary. It could be primary beneficiary, contingent or secondary beneficiaries. But the POD or the TOD, think like beneficiary, and it's essentially the same thing. And Peg, the question when we come back is, how do we do that? When do we do that? When don't we do that? And we'll talk about TOD and POD when we come back. Thank you, Susie.
No problem. I think it's a question a lot of us have. 651-461-9226. We've got the whole half hour to answer your questions, but I do want to remind you, if you want to write this down, you can email any question at any time, and that email is yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. That would go to the office, and they would get back to you on that. Also, you can call the office at 888-6-ADVICE. Looking forward to more of your questions on the other side of this break on Your Money. Back after this. It is Your Money. I'm Susie Jones. We are continuing with Bruce and Peg and all of your text questions. Remember, if you're listening right now and you have a financial question that you don't have time to get to, you can call the office at 1-888-1-888-6-ADVICE, or you can always email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Here once again, Bruce and Peg, and our number here on our talk and text line, 651-461-9226. Take it away, Bruce.
Thank you, Susie Jones. Thank you for sticking with us, listeners. If you joined us late, we're doing an open line show today. Ask Peg and Bruce anything. And before we went to break, everyone, we had a question about POD, payable upon death, or TOD, transfer on death. And we kind of set the question up, Peg, but we never really answered it. I'll let you take it.
Yeah, it was pretty recent that houses that you could put a payable on death or a transfer on death. What that actually means is it supersedes your will. I truly want to clarify that because most of you listening are going to have a will or a trust that actually lays out exactly what you want to happen with all your assets. Well, recently, because let's just take your IRA, and you probably all know that you can name a beneficiary on your IRA, whether it's a Roth IRA or a traditional IRA, and then whoever you write as a beneficiary on there, a transfer on death, that is going to directly go to those people. It will not even, you know, it doesn't matter what your will says about the percentages that you want to give this one and that one. It actually outright goes to that person. So with a house, recently, especially in Minnesota, they are allowing you to go to the county and get your title of your house, and you can put a name on there as a beneficiary. That's been very popular now for the last couple of years, and we've been coaching our clients to do that because our clients want whatever's easy for their children or their beneficiaries to be something that they want to get done. Now, I know you can do that in Minnesota. I don't know about every other state, and I know we have many listeners in different states. So you may want to call your county or Google your county to see if you're able to do a transfer on death. Same kind of thing with cars, although once again, state that you live in is going to dictate what you can and can't do. There's some states that don't allow you to just put a transfer on death on a document, but like here in the state of Florida, they've actually got a special document called the Lady Bird document, and there's only 5 states out of all our states that do it that way. So once again, Bruce and Susie, it really matters where you live, and to get advice from the county or your financial advisor in your area could help you figure out where to go to. Bruce?
Yeah, so the texter and took what can be a fairly simple, frequent, prevalent thing and made it a little more complex by talking about, you know, a home or real estate, or Peg, you even brought up a car. The more frequent or more prevalent one, though, that we see with regard to TOD and POD is if you have a brokerage account or a bank account that's not in an IRA or any type of a retirement plan. And Peg, I think a lot of people think that when they go to the bank and they open up a CD, they don't even think to put a beneficiary or on the account. I think they think it happens automatically, but you have to actually instruct that financial institution that you want somebody named on your account if something happens to you. Because if you don't have a will or a trust, and a lot of people don't, and you don't have a POD or a TOD on the account, and you die without a will or intestate, then the state that you live in gets to decide the distribution of those assets, and they may not decide the way that you want to decide. So the simpler version of POD or TOD is on these accounts that many, many, many listeners have. And again, it's less frequent and more complex if we're talking about homes or property and cars. But the kind of everyday accounts, a lot of people I think listening right now have these accounts and don't have a beneficiary, and they might think that they do. Mm. Hey, Peg, before we get back to Susie and the listeners, I had somebody in the first half of the show, you mentioned rebalancing. We started out by talking about the market is at all-time highs. People are thinking maybe I should get out of the market. Maybe I should stop putting money into the market. We said, no, don't get out just because it's high, but there might be reasons why you take some winnings off the table or shift some out of the market. And you mentioned rebalancing, which was really smart. And we've talked about that on the show before, but I had somebody, a friend and a client, who oftentimes will shoot me a text message during the show. And he texted me and said, how does an investor know when to rebalance and how do you go about rebalancing? Can you talk a little bit about rebalancing and how we do it at Wealth Enhancement?
Yeah, so its simplest form is, let's just take $10,000 that you have in the stock market and $10,000 that you have in bonds or fixed income. You know, so if we take 2023 and look at the performance of both of those, the stock market was amazingly great, right? So we have more money than $10,000 in our stock market bucket right now. And you might have $12,000, $2,000 more than you had the beginning of the year. In the bond market, interest rates went higher, dramatically higher. And if you priced your bonds to the market, they actually went down $2,000. So now you're up $2,000 in one and you're down $2,000 in the other. Now, that's kind of a bad example in that they're both the same. But what we're saying is that you might want to take those $2,000 profits and buy the fixed income side when it's down. So then you're buying low and you're selling high on the other side. And part of the guide of doing that is you first have an allocation. I describe the asset allocation as a 50-50, half the stock market and half fixed income. Most people are somewhere between 60-40, 60% in the stock market. Some people are as high as 80% in the stock market for a couple reasons. Well, they're younger, you know, they have a lot more time, or they've already identified a lot of assets that are going to the next generation. So they could be in their late 70s, 80s, but they're trying to invest the money for the next couple generations and are still in the stock market. So it's very important that you look at your original asset allocation. How much is it off based on your stated amount, say 60% stock market, 40% fixed income, and then you just even them out. And I just described that where you might sell off some of your stocks and go into the bonds that are low now. Bruce?
So, and that's a great answer for what rebalancing is. And what I tell people, Peg, I think everybody in our industry, all the money managers, all the financial advisors, I think there's universal, pretty much unanimous agreement that rebalancing makes sense. Everybody does it. But I don't know if anybody does it exactly the same way. Some people rebalance by calendar. Some people rebalance by they set up a mechanism that if there's X percent of growth on one side, they rebalance. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think at Wealth Enhancement, there's multiple factors and multiple variables. They don't do it just by calendar. They don't have a specific growth number. I think they look, you know, at like 75 to 80 markets around the globe on a daily basis. They try to spot trends, what's undervalued, what's overvalued, but they manage the portfolio. So they don't manage for our specific client. What I mean by that is if we have a 70-30 portfolio or a bellwether portfolio that's, you know, common within the investment world, and they're going to rebalance that portfolio and sell some stock and buy some fixed income, they're going to do it in the portfolio and for every investor that's in that portfolio. So if you're my client and you're in that 70-30, or you're Peg's client and you're in that 70-30, everybody's going to get the same change at the same time. Now, everybody's got a different amount of money in that portfolio, so it's as a percentage. They sell a certain percentage of stock, buy a certain percentage of fixed income, and everybody gets that change because they're managing for the what they think is the efficiency of the portfolio without really knowing all the specific clients in that portfolio. Now, if we think our client should not get more conservative or should stay more aggressive, then it's up to the advisor and the client to say, well, maybe we want to switch from that 70-30 to a more aggressive portfolio, or maybe we want to get more conservative and go to a more conservative portfolio. So we can go up to 80-20 or down to 60-40, but that decision comes between client and advisor. Our investment management team is just managing the efficiency of that specific portfolio. It's up to the advisor and the client to determine what portfolio or portfolios, plural, is appropriate for them. So to the question, when do you rebalance? That's not an exact science. A lot of people do it differently, but I think everybody agrees it is efficient to rebalance. In terms of the specifics, when and how, everybody's got a different opinion on that. I don't know that anybody's ever figured out the exact right answer to that question. Susie?
All right, 651-461-9226. A texter writes this morning, they have money to pay off their home, which is at a pretty good rate right now, 4.5%. The person says they have cash, and they're wondering about paying off their home mortgage early. What would your thought be on that? I think that's a pretty common question. You know, we all kind of go, "Shit, is it better to get rid of it?" Is that still true, or is it kind of passe?
So, thank you, Susie. So, Peg, Susie's right, and the texter's right. This is a question we get often, and we've talked about it a lot. But again, the fact that the question keeps coming up means that we can't talk about it too much. So let's talk about it again. Peg, when do you decide or how do you advise a client whether to pay off a mortgage or whether to pay off debt, whatever it is? When do you advise when to pay off debt versus to keep the money invested?
Yeah, so there's a couple things. Number one is math, arithmetic, and see if what you're paying in interest is better, is less than actually what you're paying out in interest. Then the second part of that is, am I able to deduct my mortgage? Am I itemizing on my tax return? Because then that alters what your 4.5 really is cost-wise to you. Now, many, many people cannot itemize, as I said earlier in the show, so that's something to consider. And then there's also a personal preference. If people have been listening to this show for a long time, they know that Peg Webb loves debt-free people. And even though the house is solid and you know that the mortgage that you have backing that house is probably a small percentage based on the value of the house, I just, in my career, the people that have been debt-free, like all debt-free, are the most successful clients I've ever had. And so that's 25 years at Wealth Enhancer Group, I can just tell you. So because what happens, Bruce, is that if you keep that mortgage out there and you keep paying it, yes, it takes money out of your pocket that you can spend, but it also takes money out of pocket that you can invest for the long term. And so what I do is with clients, and it, especially in the past, I, you know, show them the two different sides to that scenario. And a lot of times people want to be debt free, but maybe it doesn't make sense to do it. Then what I have them do is just have the money automatically taken out of their account so that they don't feel like, oh, this is such a pain, I don't want to do this. It just automatically goes out every month because mathematically it makes sense for them to not pay it off. Bruce?
And Peg, I agree with every word you just said. I'm gonna just throw this out there, though, as a devil's advocate, and I'll use myself as the example. I still have a mortgage personally. I could pay off my mortgage tomorrow. I could write a check and pay it off tomorrow. But I've got to tell you, Peg and listeners and Susie, all of my money right now, and I have a lot of money in the stock market, but I have a lot of money in bank accounts, money markets, CDs, fixed interest accounts with no risk of principal. All of my money right now, whether it's in the market, it's been averaging. Now, again, in 2022, it didn't. 2022, I had negative return on that money. But the average on that money has been much higher than the cost of my debt service. I got my mortgage years ago when interest rates were still really low. They're much higher today than they were 5 years ago. So my interest rate on my mortgage is still under 3%. So all of my money, whether it's in a bank or whether it's in a brokerage account, whether it's in a retirement plan, is earning a better rate of return right now than the interest rate I'm paying on my mortgage. So I choose not to pay off the mortgage because I think the rate of return on my money, where it's at, is going to be higher than the cost of the debt service or higher than the interest rate on my mortgage. If I was someone that had to take a mortgage out today and instead of getting, and I do still itemize and I get to deduct that interest cost. If I was somebody taking a mortgage out today and it was at 7% and I didn't itemize and I took a standard deduction and I had money that I was able to pay off that debt, then I'd give you a different answer. Or like you and I absolutely always agree on, Peg, if it's bad debt, if it's debt that's higher interest rate than a mortgage, not deductible, on something that you just want, on a depreciating asset rather than an appreciating asset, which your home probably is, then you and I absolutely agree, pay down that debt, pay off that debt. But on a mortgage, I agree with everything Peg said, I think a case can be made, and I'm the example here, of not paying off that mortgage. Now, again, I may change my mind when I retire. I may change my mind for a lot of different reasons. But as we sit here today, April 7th, 2024, I am choosing not to pay off my mortgage, even though I could. Susie, do we have time for one more?
Yeah, this is a good one. My last of three kids in her final semester of college, we've covered all expenses and believe that we'll have quite a bit left over in their three separate 529 plans. How can I balance the amounts of these three separate accounts, and is there a way I can give them money into a retirement account without penalty?
That is such a great question. Peg, maybe we have to start by even telling listeners that maybe don't know. Obviously, the texter knows and understands 529 plans, but maybe we start there and define them and then answer the question.
Well, a 529 plan is a, higher education. It doesn't even have to be a higher education. You could use them for parochial school and that kind of thing. They've changed a lot, the flexibility of using them. But you deposit money into a 529 with the thought that it is for school education, and a lot of people do it for children and grandchildren. One of the beauties of that is because it will grow tax-free if you're willing to invest, and there's lots of options to invest, stock market, fixed income market, that kind of thing. The one caveat is that the money needs to be used for school. And we are finding that with some clients that they've put too much money in the 529. And the question is, you know, how do they get it out? Well, number one, you can always change the beneficiary. So I've had some clients where they would leave the name on for the grandchildren or their children, and then they can always down the road change the name to either it has to be a family member or just like an extended family member that you can change the name to. You change to multiple names. There's a lot of flexibility there. If indeed you do cash it out, then there is a penalty, you know, if you want to get the cash back out. And we have a formula that we use to figure out how much it would cost you to just take the money and possibly give it to the child at this time, if that's something that you want to do. Bruce?
Peg, and I've told this story before. I actually had a client one time that ended up naming themselves as the beneficiary when grandkids couldn't use the money, and they used it to get a master gardener designation and qualified for that. Peg, we've got less than 2 minutes left. Rather than trying to squeeze in another question, let's stay on this just a little bit longer. And I don't want to throw you a curveball that you're not ready for, but part of the question also is something changed recently with regard to 529s and being able to convert them to Roth IRAs. And I can't remember exactly how that works. Do you remember? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's actually super brand new, and it's up to like $35,000. I personally haven't had anyone take advantage of this. We're only in March of or April of 24, but it is something to look at. It's not quite as great as I thought it was going to be because you have to do it in pieces to get it over. But yes, we're very familiar with it. I just haven't utilized it yet, Bruce.
So at the end of the day, there are options. If they end up not using all the money for the 529, you can change beneficiaries. If that doesn't work, you might be able to shift some of it to a retirement plan. The bottom line here, again, as is often the case, if you're not sure, don't try to do this alone. Seek out counsel from a financial advisor, and they can probably help you figure that out. But, 529s are probably more user-friendly now than they've ever been. So, Susie, I know we're about out of time. Thanks to listeners for their contributions. They made it a really interesting show.
Very interesting show. And if you did not get your question answered, you can call 1-888-6-ADVICE. You can also go online and email your questions to wealthenhancement.com. That's your money at wealthenhancement.com. Make it a great week.